The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome back to the Dan Prof Show. On last night's program, we talked about the study from MIT economists on lockdowns, suggesting that targeted lockdown that protects the older and those with comorbidities is more effective, both in terms of saving lives as well as in minimizing economic damage. There is another study out from Israeli researchers that similarly looked at a compartmentalized model to examine the implications of what they describe as a controlled avalanche strategy over the population in Israel. That would mean effectively variolation. 20 to 49-year-olds with no comorbidities offered the option to be voluntarily exposed to the virus under controlled supervision and then be issued immunity certificates. So it's just a different way to get to the same point of saying, you know, just setting aside the legal and constitutional implications. Another way of getting to the same place of saying we're going to allow the young and healthy to open back up and participate in civil society while we protect the older and the vulnerable. They find that the same thing, sort of a targeted lockdown, reduces the overall mortality by 43%, reduces the maximum number of people in need of ICUs by 62%, decreases the time required for the release of 50% of the low-risk population, the young and the healthy, by more than 2 months. The study suggests, they conclude, these researchers, an ethically acceptable practice that enables reaching herd immunity faster than the current alternatives with low mortality and minimal economic damage. And yet in the United States, you still have states that are committed to, number one, ignoring cognitive dissonance to their approach, which is to treat everybody equally in a shutdown or lockdown situation. For more on this topic, as well as some big thoughts about how to answer the really big question, which is getting to a vaccine, pleased to be joined by Alex Tabarrok, who is the Bartley J. Madden Chair in Economics at the Mercatus Center, professor of economics at George Mason University, and co-runs the site Marginal Revolution with Tyler Cohen, one of the best sites in the world for economic thought. Alex, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Happy to be here.
Before we get to some of your ideas on vaccines and the approach, as well as just the approach to the vaccine in particular, react to the research from MIT, from these Israeli researchers I mentioned, that suggests that the targeted lockdown is the better model.
So I think that's probably right if we can combine it with mass testing. So if you can reduce the number of people who are infected in the population who are out and about and, you know, get onto hotspots really quickly with testing and tracing, then I think segregating the elderly and, you know, particularly watching out in the nursing homes can be effective. What is not going to work is if we just If the only thing we do is to segregate the elderly, that's not going to work because then you have so many people getting it that it actually becomes harder to segregate the elderly because there's more people you have to segregate them from because a lot more people are getting it. So I really think that we need to combine mass testing with a better kind of a more targeted lockdown.
And on the mass testing question, you know, how can we do a more effective job of that? What we're hearing now from a lot of quarters is it's not a capacity issue. It's a individuals volunteering to be tested issue. So how do we do a better job of implementing the mass testing if you're not getting people proactively submitting to the tests?
Well, I think there's plenty of people who would like to be tested. I think the problem still is not putting enough resources behind testing. You know, in the latest bill, we put $25 billion behind a whole bunch of things, including testing. That sounds like a lot of money, except when you compare it to how much we spend, let's say, on soft drinks every year, that's $65 billion. So we're still not even putting soft drink money behind the one thing, well, one of the few things which could actually get the economy rolling again, namely a lot more tests.
And when you're talking about testing, you're talking about both testing for the virus as well as the antibody testing.
Correct, both the PCR test and the antibody test. I think we probably need both.
All right, when we come back, I want to pick up on this discussion at the point which you have ideas and thoughts about how we should be thinking about pursuing a vaccine, including with public investment. Talking to Alex Tabarrok, who is the Bartley J. Madden Chair in Economics at the Mercatus Center, economic professor at George Mason University. More right after this.
Stay with me.
The Dan Proft Show.
Welcome back to the Dan Proft Show. We're talking to Professor Alex Tabarrok. He's the Bartley J. Madden Chair in Economics at the Mercatus Center, economics professor at George Mason University. And Professor Tabarrok, along with some colleagues, you penned this op-ed in the New York Times calling for the United States to go big, really, really big in pursuit of a vaccine. And you suggest that part of it is just the science and getting that right, and then the trials. But you also, you and your colleagues also suggest that there's a public investment that could be made to expedite this process.
Correct. So here's the key point. Most vaccines fail. And they fail even given the vaccines typically take, 10 years to produce. We're asking the vaccine manufacturers to start producing something, in 12 months or 18 months or something like that. So the failure rate is probably going to be quite high. That means we need to invest in a lot of vaccines. We think at least 15 to 20. Also, what we really want to happen is that the moment we have an approved vaccine, we want the manufacturers to be up and ready to be running with that. Now, typically, a manufacturer, they're not going to start investing in getting the factory ready until we have approval. We want them to do it before the vaccine is approved. It's not profitable to do that. It's not profitable for a vaccine manufacturer to get the factory ready before they even know whether the vaccine has been approved. So they're not going to want to do that. So we need to support some of that investment with some government support in order to get them willing and ready to run the moment a vaccine is available.
Well, and there seems to be some precedent for this in real time, which is Gilead with remdesivir is setting up for the mass production of that therapeutic if the clinical trials that have proved promising continue to produce good results and ultimately go beyond the emergency use authorization to more general application.
Exactly right. And Bill Gates and CEPI and Gavi, some non-government organizations with some government support, they have been encouraging the vaccine manufacturers to do this. But we just think we just need more of that. Bill Gates cannot do this all by himself, even as the world's richest man. We really need more support. In addition, the vaccine manufacturers can actually start to produce some of this stuff and store it before it has gone through safety and efficacy trials. So again, the idea is that once a vaccine is approved, they've already got some in storage, ready to be delivered even. And again, that is going to take some money up front because ordinarily it's not profitable to do that. You're not going to want to start producing vaccine until you know that your vaccine has been approved for sale. But we want them to work faster, and that's why we need some government involvement here.
just on that score, thinking about investment, that should be part of a conversation that really it's not part of right now. And that's the discussion among the political parties and the leadership of the parties about what new disaster relief legislation may include, whether it's a payroll tax holiday or tort reform or more money for states and localities, that back and forth. I haven't heard much discussion about the need to set aside some funding for vaccine development that you're suggesting.
Yeah, I mean, this is absolutely crazy. We've spent hundreds of billions, probably $1 trillion or more on relief. And I'm not against that. That's fine. But it'd be much smarter to actually spend money on fighting the virus. And we've done very little of that. We've spent very little on testing, and we've spent very little on promoting vaccines, encouraging and incentivizing vaccines. So we need to get on the ball and start investing in science. And part of that is to use the economics of incentives so that we can get these manufacturers ready to roll once a vaccine is approved.
Robin Hanson, who's an academic but also an engineer, had an interesting post that you all profiled at marginalrevolution.com. He's an interesting thinker. We've had him on the show before. He actually was talking about variolation, whether you agree with it or disagree with it. He was at least raising the specter of it four or five weeks ago. Just interesting now that you have some studies modeling that. But one of the things he talks about in terms of the reopening, and I think there's commentary from Tyler Cohn in reaction to it, is this part of the failure to do things like you're suggesting is a failure of policymakers to consider political economy in their prescriptions for responding to this outbreak. And when you don't have a holistic contemplation of all of the damage being done by not only the virus, but the choices being made to combat it, you start to lose legitimacy. People start to tune out. You no longer have the consent of the governed, and now you've got just people going their own way.
Right. I think that's a problem. And I think, look, how can we bring all of America together? And to me, America is the most innovative, ingenious economy in the world. We have the top scientists. We got the biggest economy. And the American can-do attitude is to fight the virus. We all ought to be able to agree on that. It's amazing to me. Democrats and Republicans, it doesn't matter. They all ought to be able to agree. Let's use science to actually fight the virus. And that means investing in testing. It means investing in labs. It means investing in vaccine research. That is how Americans respond to challenge. We don't just say, well, we're going to live through this thing, or we're going to let people die. We're just going to go for herd immunity, or even we're just going to protect our citizens with unemployment insurance. What Americans do is they go out and fight, and they fight with science. And that's the way I think that we could unite everyone around a big Manhattan Project style program to really get to the moon, okay, to really get to where we want to go, which is a vaccine and which is mass testing.
As the saying goes, sort of some of the biggest ideas in the world are the simplest, and it's a pretty simple baseline. We all want a vaccine, so why don't we act in furtherance of it? And with respect to the price tag, I think you put on the sort of investment that would be required to get the manufacturing capacity underwritten for 15 to 20 potential vaccines. You were talking about, $100 billion?
Yeah, and look, the economy right now is losing $150 to $350 billion a month.
Right.
Okay. So anything that we spend, $100 billion, that will pay for itself even if we open the economy up, you know, a few weeks sooner. The one virtue of this disaster is that it's so expensive, we can afford to go against it big. We can afford to fight it big. You know, this is like a World War II kind of moment, is that it's do or die. You know, it's go big or stay home. We don't want to stay home any longer, so let's go big.
He is Alex Tabarrok, Bartley J. Madden Chair in Economics at the Mercatus Center, economics professor at George Mason University, and co-host of Marginal Revolution, a blog which I routinely recommend that he administers with Tyler Cohen. Alex Tabarrok, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Great speaking with you.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. This is the Dan Prof Show.